This podcast is a part of the Newhoff Media Podcast Network.
Good morning and welcome to Community Connection. We're halfway through the week and I've got quite a story for you today. We have with us David Burns, and I'm not really sure of your official title, David, but all I know is your email has Beekeeper Burns in it, so I can't wait to hear more about you. I was kind of joking before we went on the air that the most I knew about bees was honey and stings, so I'm sure you're going to give us more info.
I am. I am actually a what's called an EAS Certified Master Beekeeper. It's EAS is Eastern Apicultural Society. And I've been a master beekeeper since 2010. And to be a master beekeeper, you have to go through a rigorous series of various tests.
I can't wait to learn from you. I know that like when I'm shopping at Menards or Lowe's, some of those different places, I'm starting to see more and more little, instead of birdhouses, like bee houses. I'm not sure what you call them, that they're not houses, but I'm starting to see more and more, and, you know, driving through the country, I'm spotting little white bee boxes. That's probably not the proper name either, but I think it's becoming more and more popular.
It is. Yeah. They're called beehives, and they are okay. Home to the bees. And that design has been around since the late 1800s. We really haven't changed it that much. And inside there usually is 10 frames on each single box. And the bees build their comb in there. One queen, and they've got about 200 to 2,000 male bees. And all they do is mate with virgin queens. And the rest are all female worker bees, probably about 40,000 female worker bees in that box.
Okay, so how do you go from being the female worker bee to the queen? What's the difference?
Yeah, well, every colony has about 40,000 bees in there. And again, they're all female worker bees except for the drones and that one queen. And so there's no king in a beehive, just one queen. All she does is lay eggs. And she lays about 2,000 eggs per day in the spring and summer. So she's really busy. Now, if something happens to her, like she dies or the beekeeper accidentally kills her, the bees quickly take a fertilized egg or a larvae, a young developing brood, and they will actually continue to feed it royal jelly all of its developing life until it does change over and become a queen instead of a worker bee. And so they can quickly replace a queen if they need to.
Okay, well, thank you for clarifying that, because I was curious, like how do you get to be queen? That's the role I'd be trying to fight for, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, it's an easy job, I guess, if you like laying eggs all day.
So, obviously, this isn't a field that everybody was willing to jump into. How in the world did you get started, David?
Well, a long time ago when I was in my early 30s, somebody came up to me and said, "Hey, I'm a beekeeper." He was a friend of mine. "I'm a beekeeper. Do you want to be a beekeeper?" I was like, "Yeah, I'm pretty adventurous." Well, he said a tree fell over. There's a beehive in it. And we'll go and open it up and move all the comb out of there into a beehive. I'll get you set up and start. And I'll tell you what, it was not the right way to start. Those bees were so aggravated that we were using a chainsaw on that tree. We were trying to help them out, but, you know, they don't like noises like that. And so that was a rough way to start. And ever since then, I just stayed in it. I just kept learning. And, you know, that was back in early 90s, and there was no internet, no YouTube, and very few people that are into beekeeping like they are now. And so I was on my own, really. I just kind of was self-taught.
Mm-hmm. Well, good information. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will be right back. Welcome back to Community Connection. Today we have David Burns with us. He is a certified master beekeeper. And so, David, how does one start? Because, again, I think you're right. I think it is starting to be more of a hobby with more and more people joining.
It is, and it's a fun hobby. I mean, a lot of people are scared to death of bees. And, you know, we need a healthy respect for bees. They do sting. But on the other hand, you know, through taking classes and getting familiar with beekeeping, you can really keep bees and avoid bee stings almost entirely. I mean, there's protective gear, we smoke our bees, but most people are getting started in beekeeping because they love having honeybees to pollinate their gardens and fruit trees, and more people are finding ways to be sustainable at home with their gardens, and, you know, they want the bees to help with their farm or whatever, and so people are getting into beekeeping, and now's a good time, actually, because in the spring, this is when you set your hive up for the year. You usually order, you know, like we sell packages of bees that people can order, and then they put it in a beehive, and away they go for the year.
So I have a lot of thoughts jumping through my mind. First one, I love Little House on the Prairie. I probably read any book that's associated with that. And in one of the books, Pa goes out, or wait a minute, maybe it's Almanzo, maybe it's Almanzo. They go out and they actually, a tree has felled and they get the beehive and, you know, they do the whole smoke method. So when you're saying things really haven't changed, you know, I just remembered that jumped in my mind.
Yeah, exactly. We do smoke bees to calm them down, just a little bit of smoke. You've probably seen, you know, movies or pictures, like you said, of beekeepers smoking their hive. And bees communicate through their antenna, and then they release pheromones to talk through the pheromones. And so they receive the pheromones on their antennae. And when we smoke bees, it kind of gets small microscopic smoke particles on their antenna. And then they can't communicate anymore. And when they don't communicate, they kind of freeze and think, what happened, you know? And they're calmer. And so that's what smoke does. But they can quickly clean their antenna off by scraping it through. They fold their leg and scrape off their antenna to clean it. So that's why you smoke them like every 5 minutes or so to keep them calm while we're inside the hive. But things really haven't changed much. I mean, we have new pathogens and diseases and pests that have come into the U.S. over the last 10 or 20 years. That's been a challenge to beekeepers, but the management style is still about the same.
Mm-hmm. So you said now is a good time to start. Tell me more about that. How does one start?
Yeah, I'll go the simple route. Most people can just say, oh, I'm thinking about being a beekeeper. Well, where do I buy a hive? You can go online. There's a lot of bee companies online now. There's some probably in the area around Danville area that people could find out, and they could buy the actual boxes, which are called the hives. And then, you know, you buy those boxes and then you order your bees, and bees arrive in a plastic or wooden box with screen on it so they can get air, with about 10,000 bees and one mated queen. And so you purchase those. Those are usually delivered into our area probably about late March all the way to late April. Pretty good month time span there. Then you pick up your bees and you just pour them into your box and, again, set the queen's cage in there, and they eat through the candy to let their queen out. And so it's just a matter of purchasing the things you need. Everybody needs a suit or a hat and a veil, a hive tool and a smoker. And you're off and running.
Mm-hmm. And what do you do once you've done that initial setup? What's it look like on a weekly basis, or, I don't know, daily? How much time do you dedicate to it?
Yeah, good question. I get that asked a lot. And actually, it depends on the beekeeper. I recommend that most people inspect their hive about every 2 weeks. It's not a real extensive inspection. You just open it up, and then you pull out a frame of young developing bees to make sure your queen is laying eggs. And if she is, then you just close it up. You know that everything's fine. We want to make sure our queen doesn't ever fail, because then they won't have any future bees. And so they're replacing bees pretty quickly. In the summer, the bees only live about 45 days, each bee. And so they're quickly replaced. That's why the queen's laying so much brood, to replace the bees that are essentially working themselves to death, bringing in nectar to make honey. But it can be as time-consuming as you want it. It's not like a dog or a cat where you have to keep watering them all the time or feeding them. You can pretty much leave them alone as long as they're healthy and doing well.
Mm-hmm. I'm writing down a gazillion questions. I don't know if I'll get them all in. So how in the world do you identify a queen in that setup? How do you know who the queen is?
That's one of the more difficult things of a new beekeeper. It comes with experience. And so the queen is a little bit longer, and she sometimes is marked. Sometimes we paint a little dab of paint on the back of her thorax, and that helps a beekeeper identify her. But if she's not marked, you're just kind of looking for a little bit larger bee. And I admit that for a new beginner, it's very hard. After you do it a while, you kind of get the idea. Okay, I know what the queen looks like now. I can find her more quickly, but it is a challenge because she's usually the same color and maybe only a quarter inch longer, so it can be a challenge.
Mm-hmm. So now when you said that you sell packaged bees, how do you pick, how do you get the queen out of that bunch? Again, just by knowing how to identify her and make sure one's included?
Yeah, we actually raise our queens separately. So during, you know, the early part of March, we start raising queens, and this is done further south where it's warmer, but we start raising our queens, and so we raise them about the time that we make our packages up, so that we raise the queen. Now, she goes in a separate cage all by herself. Maybe sometimes she's got a few attendants to feed her, but she's in a separate little tiny cage by herself, and it's held in close proximity or maybe sometimes inside those bees. And so they start getting used to her through the screen in her cage. But by the time the beekeeper gets their package, they usually just put the queen cage in the box that they have poured their bees into. And then there's a little cork. They release the cork on the queen cage, and then the bees eat through the candy because we want them to get used to their new queen. If we introduce her too fast, they may not recognize her and think she's kind of an intruder or a foreign queen. So it's kind of a slow introduction to the new queen.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like chicks with grown chickens. You got to introduce them slowly.
Yeah.
So with the queen laying all these eggs and doing that all day, how long does she actually last?
Oh, that's a good question. I love that. Because some people think she lasts a long time, and she, you know, like I said earlier, most worker bees work themselves to death within 45 days in the summer. The queen can live and lay eggs up to 2 to 3 years. And so she only takes one mating flight after she's born and gets to be an adult. After a few days, she'll take a mating flight. She'll mate with over 20 drones, and the sperm of those drones are stored in her body in an organ called the spermatheca for her whole life. She never has to mate again. So she can stay in that hive and lay eggs for 2 to 3 years. Then she just dies of old age. And if she does, the bees quickly take a fertilized egg and feed it royal jelly and simply raise a new queen to replace her.
Good information. Okay, let's take our second break and we'll come back to finish the show. Welcome back to the final segment of Community Connection. Today we have David Burns with us, and he is a certified master beekeeper. And so, you know, we kind of mentioned the Midwest and the Danville area. How do the bees not freeze?
Yeah, they do have a challenge with cold weather. However, bees don't hibernate like a bear would. Bees simply cluster is the term we use. So let's say you have 40,000 bees going into winter and it gets below 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Well, the bees actually get really close to each other and generate heat by their muscles, and they just kind of stay balled up together. They eat a little bit of nectar or honey, whatever in the near them inside the hive, but they don't fly outside the hive in the wintertime unless it gets, you know, above 50 degrees Fahrenheit. And so they're just kind of tucked away there, staying warm, hoping that spring will come early, like pretty much what we do. You know, we stay in our houses and we try to stay warm. But it is hard on bees to be cold if they don't have enough food in the hive. They can starve to death. So beekeepers, we've actually invented some ways where we can give food to bees in the wintertime, and we sell a lot of those products. So feeding bees in the winter can really help them survive cold Illinois winters.
Mm-hmm, good. I've wondered about that because there are some hives not too awfully far away from me. And I thought as I would drive by, I wonder how those bees are making it through this cold. So thank you for that. Now, you've mentioned drones a couple of times. What are those?
Yeah, drones are male bees. And so the male bees only do one thing, and they only mate with a virgin queen. So a typical hive in the summertime, they'll have 200 to 2,000 male drone bees. They look a little different. They're larger. They have larger compound eyes. And so they fly out of the hive in the morning, and they go to drone congregation areas within a mile or two of that beehive, and they hang out in mass numbers. Virgin queens know where those areas are, and the virgin queen, an unmated queen, will fly there and mate with all those, well, 20 drones of those thousands of drones in the air. She'll mate with them and fly back to her hive as a mated queen. The bad news is, after the drone mates with the queen, he immediately dies. And so that's just the way nature works. And so drones, if they come back to the hive at the end of the day, they were unsuccessful. They'll try it again tomorrow. But they don't do anything at all except mate with virgin queens. All the bees in the hive feed them and take care of them. They got a pretty nice life when you stop and think about it. No work. Everybody feeds you. Just go out and mate with a virgin queen. That's the end of your life.
So, David, you had me cracking up because the vision in my mind, except for the whole dying part, it's like spring break.
Yeah. I've heard
a lot. Spring break.
I know. I've heard a lot of different people just crack up when they hear the life of a drone bee, the male bee. Yeah.
Poor drones, or not so poor. I don't know. So what is royal jelly?
Royal jelly is interesting. It's a compound that people marvel over. It's produced by the worker bees between the ages of 6 to 12 days old. And at that age, their gland, hypopharyngeal and a mandibular gland, it actually develops this royal jelly, and they express it through their mouth parts. They use it to feed young larvae. So all young larvae, 1 to 3 day old, gets royal jelly. It's a nutrition that they feed these young bees. But after day 3, the diet changes. Unless they want to raise a queen, then they keep feeding that larvae royal jelly. And that nutritious, high nutritious diet will force that larvae to become a queen. So royal jelly is actually produced by the bees in their glands.
Mm-hmm. So I've seen advertisements in magazines for this amazing royal jelly. I don't know if it's a cream or a supplement. I didn't really pay much attention to it, but I have seen advertisements for royal jelly.
Yeah, royal jelly is really very nutritious, and I've tasted it. I've eaten some before, and it really has an interesting taste. It tastes a little bit more kind of like yogurt, but a lot more tart than yogurt is. But a lot of people do believe that it has, you know, healing powers, and it has a way of making your skin look better and you feel better. I don't know if any of those claims are true, but the queen does live longer than the other bees and she only eats royal jelly her whole life.
Okay, so there may be something to that.
Could be.
So what about, okay, this is like switching. So what about wasps? Just a whole different process. I mean, obviously they're not making honey, but they're one of those stinging things that I kind of relate to a bee.
Yeah. Yeah, wasps and honeybees are different. You know, the wasps oftentimes are not a social insect like we think of bees are. They're smaller. They have smaller nests, and they don't really add a ton of honey like bees do in storage. And here in Illinois, we have a lot of wasps. You know, we have the red wasps and dirt daubers. We have yellow jackets. And so wasps are really a different insect entirely in how they, and when you compare them to a honeybee, for sure, because
okay,
honeybees have to work together. It's honeybees are actually a single super organism. One bee outside the hive is will not live long, and so they have to work together and do all their chores together. And so wasps can be more independent than honeybees are.
Okay, well, thank you for that. So what about threats? What are threats to the bee population, and what can people do to help?
Yeah, one of the biggest threats we experience right now, of course, I would say, is the disappearing of natural forage resources that bees can get. So, you know, everybody wants to kill dandelions, and we live in an area where there's corn and beans, and bees really don't care too much for either. So if we're constantly getting rid of everything that bees eat, such as our wildflowers and weeds, then the bees don't have the ability to go out and gather pollen and nectar from the flowers that they live on. And so as we become more urbanized and, you know, streets and concrete and buildings and killing weeds, bees are just being pushed out because they just don't have much to forage on anymore. So that's one thing people can do is plant more flowers and don't mow every dandelion down. Let them bloom. They'll be gone after a while anyway. Bees love dandelion. And the other thing that's a threat to bees is that people often spray insecticides or pesticides to on their trees and on and maybe to kill wasp nests and such. And sometimes bees get tangled up in that and take it back to the hive, and it can kill bees. And finally, we have a lot of pests and diseases that are increasing. The world is getting smaller, and more things are being brought in from other countries that weren't here to affect bees earlier. And so now, since about the mid-80s, we've been fighting the Vora destructor mite and small hive beetles. And so new creatures are coming in to attack bees. So bees do have a challenge, but we've mitigated that by understanding how to teach beekeepers to deal with those challenges.
Mm-hmm. And then something I think I've heard about my whole life is the fact that there are killer bee populations and they're in Africa and the swarm's going to move into the United States. What's the fact or fiction?
Well, that is true. They're, you know, I don't like to use the word killer bees, but they are very dangerous. They're just, they look just the same as our bees, you know, the honeybees. They are different, tiny bit different in size. If you put them under a microscope and measure them off, but you can kind of tell the difference, but not by the visual eye. The only thing to tell the difference visually is how much more aggressive the Africanized bees are. And so the Africanized bees kind of came into the U.S. in the 50s, actually, and they've been hanging out in more drier, hotter areas, south and southwest in particular. And they are a problem in those areas, absolutely. They're very aggressive. They sting more often. They sting longer. They'll follow you longer. And so whether or not they make it up further north, it's going to be doubtful. I don't think it will, certainly in my lifetime, unless the climate changes drastically and it becomes so hot, you know, not, even in the wintertime. So as the term says, you know, they prefer drier, hotter temperatures, and so they don't do well in colder climates. So, yeah, we're always on the watch out and looking for them, but never seen any in Illinois this far north.
Okay, thank you for answering that. And then I think final question, what is beeswax?
Yeah, beeswax. Bees actually make their own wax from glands between the ages of 12 to 17 days old. And so they secrete. It's an interesting thing to watch up close on a microscope or something, but when bees consume a lot of nectar, say 11 pounds of nectar, they can actually turn that into 1 pound of beeswax. It comes out of their gland. It goes out. It's a liquid when it first is secreted. It dries on the little plate on their gland, and it becomes a wax flake. And that little flake is grabbed by the little mandibles and things of the bees, the bee parts, and they'll fashion it. They're engineers. They'll fashion it into constructing their comb in their beehive. So beeswax is manufactured in the glands of the honeybees.
Good information. We are actually out of time. I probably have some more questions I could ask, but we're just going to stop there. If people would like to learn more or have you as a guest, because again, I learned about you because you were a guest at the Catlin Library, how can they contact you and learn more?
Yeah, thank you. I have two ways you can contact me. I do have a YouTube channel that's very popular with over, 137,000 subscribers on my YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and type in David Burns Beekeeping and it'll come up. Or you can go to our website at honeybeesonline.com.
Okay, good information. Again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. I appreciate it. You've certainly educated me. And, you know, I like the thought that you said, you know, there is something we can do, plant flowers and leave the dandelions alone.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me today.
Oh, you're so welcome. Audience, we will be back in the morning. I hope you've enjoyed today's show. And yeah, have a good rest of your day.
You've been listening to the Newhoff Media Podcast Network. For more, visit newhoffmedia.com.